Let's talk about some of the wacky disc jockeys that you work with, both as a fellow DJ and later as a salesperson at Wacky. Who are some of the big names that you remember?
Well, Jay Reynolds, he was on the air when I came in there. Jay Reynolds was just a class individual. He and I, when we had a reunion like 25 years later, he and I were the only ones that were still married to our original wives.
Good for you.
Which maybe says something for his character. He died here in the late 90s with heart problems, but he went on to become a bit of a legend and in Indianapolis. He worked at WABC in New York for some time. And I remember talking to him, you know, that was always my goal. And I realized that, hey, there's just no way that I was ever going to get to New York. And I never liked to hear myself on the air anyway, but, you know, you have these dreams. But he worked at WABC in New York with the big guys like Dan Ingram and Scott Muni and the legendary era of 77 WABC. But he was the all-night guy. And I think he was making like $40,000 a year, which, and you take in the late 60s or early 70s, and I'm not sure what years he was there. But that was probably big money. But he said living in New York, he had a day job where he worked in construction, or I think he did roofing or something like that. And then he said he also tried to be a voice talent. He's king of the world in Louisville and king of the world in Indianapolis. But, hey, you know, he's in New York City where every Broadway actor is looking for voiceover jobs, and every radio personality, legendary personalities in New York. And so he finally gave up his WABC New York dream and went back to Indianapolis and was on there for a number of years, ended up going into sales and management in Indianapolis. Who else? George Williams. He was just a real quiet guy. He's one of these guys that are a bit introverted. You know, we see in radio a lot of the people who are on the surface seem introverted, but they get in front of a microphone and, man, they just become another personality. And George was a bit of that person, but he was very smooth, very conservative in his lifestyle and frugal. He watched every penny, saved every money, and probably is very wealthy today. I haven't talked to him in a few years. But last time I talked to him, and I'm assuming he's still doing the same thing, he was had a broadcast consulting firm operating out of Dallas. He was and doing consulting for Scripps Howard and the Home and Garden Network, advising a lot of the TV shows, and he added TV to his consultancy. But very, very smart individual and very, very smooth on the air. Bill Crisp, just a wild man. Fun, such a vivacious personality, and great on the air. You know, I think that's one of the things. The people in the 60s, their lives came out over the radio. You know, had a little more freedom than you do today with the formatics, and your personality was able to come through. Jim Brand, all these guys, we grew up together. You know, we lived our lives together so much. It wasn't the business-like attitude that kind of dominates us today.
Were you off the air when Bob Todd came in as program
director?
Yes,
I was.
So what was that like? Evidently, from what I've learned, that Wacky in the late 60s was really suffering at the hands of WKLO, which was programmed by Mitch Michaels, and evidently KLO had risen, and even though Wacky had led in the early 60s, it was pretty competitive, and even KLO was beating Wacky in the mid to late 60s, and supposedly Bob Todd came and revitalized the radio station. Now, you were in the sales aspect of the radio station by then, but do you remember what that was like when Bob came?
Yes, and I do remember when Bob Todd was there, because I left in the mid-70s, and then Johnny Randolph, I think, replaced Bob Todd. And actually, when I went off the air, Johnny Randolph took my place. But yes, it was very competitive. KLO with Ken Douglas, their English guy who was actually recruited. He worked in a men's store across the street from the radio station. He really wasn't very good on the air, but he had a British accent. And that was one of the things that started cutting. And of course, and that's in the mid-60s, but that was one of the steps that kind of perpetuated that. And of course, Johnny Randolph had played a role in making KLO competitive as well. But there were some wars going on in that late 60s. They'd send black flowers to one another, and they would play dirty tricks on one program director or one station personality versus the other, and stunts on the radio and playing the record first. But, you know, I think the listeners were the winners in all of that. And I think you saw the parity close between the two radio stations. And ultimately, you might have your favorite, but people were listening to both.
From what I understand, one of the things that gave WKLO the edge was that Wacky refused to play the Beatles, and KLO jumped all over them. Now, you were a disc jockey then.
That's untrue.
Do you remember any of that?
Yeah, that's untrue. When the Beatles first came out, we had a guy by the name of Rusty Reynolds who billed himself as the fifth Beatle. And he was doing mornings when the Beatles came out, and we were all over the Beatles.
So there was no ban on Beatles records at Wacky that you remember?
Not that I remember, no.
All right, let's talk about some of the folks that were there that you work with as a salesperson. And let's start off with the big one, Bill Bailey.
I remember when Bill came to WKLO, and let me tell you, that is probably as big a factor of KLO coming into parity with Wacky than anything else. We listened to him, and we thought, oh, what a joke. He'll never last. He's terrible. As we saw the numbers creep, our opinions changed. Even with the competition, there was some camaraderie with some of the KLO personalities. Not a whole lot, but people knew each other and got acquainted with him. And you've heard the stories, and I've heard it on somewhere here on your website about Johnny telling about how he got Bill Bailey out of KLO, and then he came back. And of course, I was in sales when Bill Bailey came there. He was, I mean, you talk about living the lifestyle. I mean, he lived it. He's probably paying some of the price today for it.
But how close was he to Jack Sanders?
Jack Sanders, his interests went in a lot wider areas, where Bill was primarily drinking.
I see.
Jack Sanders, he drinking and gambling and promiscuousness, and heaven only knows what else.
Let's talk about Weird Beard.
Weird Beard, you know, probably one of the most miscast people in the entire world, just one of the gentlest people, and he had a hard time growing a beard. Really, his beard was so thin, it was just barely a beard. He was a person that was probably opposite of his on-air personality, a real caring person, a gentle person, a family person. And, you know, when the tragedy happened with his son, I mean, it just devastated him. And he ended up leaving town, and it just was really deep to him.
Dude Walker.
Dude Walker, smooth individual, classy individual, big voice, nice guy, always talked about Memphis and finally got back to Memphis. And I had the pleasure of seeing him do some newscasts when he was a weatherman in Memphis.
Gary Burbank.
Just a unique individual who really loved what he did. He would come in the morning, and this is the day of one or two production studios. And of course, everybody get upset because he would dominate the whole production studio. And eventually, they gave him access to his own production studio because he would come in and two-thirds of his show was pre-produced. And this is the days when you're splicing tape and everything. He would come in and work diligently to put his show together. And again, he's one of those people who is just almost opposite of the person who came on the air. He really shunned people. He really didn't like the spotlight, wanted to be a little bit anonymous, didn't care for personal appearances. Money was a bit secondary. I'm sure that's changed by now. I know one time he was wooed by a larger market. He really didn't want to leave, but it was a lot of money, and he was kind of tempted. And the general manager, Don Myers, gave him a little bit more money and bought him a new refrigerator. And he said, well, that's enough of an excuse to stay, and turned down bigger money and stayed because he had a comfort zone in Louisville and liked what he did. A touch of irony, too, talking about the Triangle Talent Agency. His wife, Carol, was our secretary at Triangle Talent. Jay O'Brien, who his real name is Howard Toole, but he was just a high-energy guy that he really worked at his craft. He was really into the formatics. He just loved radio and is still in radio in Dallas in a management capacity.
Mason Lee Dixon.
Mason Lee Dixon was a hard worker, a good guy, was not like his name at all. He was just a workhorse, a go-to guy. Lee Masters, one of the proud names to go through there. Always businesslike, always prepared. I guess I shouldn't be real surprised that he moved up into the ranks that he did to become president of MTV and E! Network or whatever else he's done. But he was very methodical and very businesslike, but very, very good on the air, very, very solid, very sincere.
Out of the 10 years that you were at Wacky, who was your favorite DJ?
Probably Jack Sanders. He really was. I'd say close behind would be Jay Reynolds.
And as a salesperson, who was the easiest guy to work with?
Johnny Randolph. Johnny would do anything for you. He was one of the early program directors that knew that there was a connection between sales and programming. And sales would come to the program director and say, we want to do this. Where many a program director, no way, Jose. He would find a way where you could still accomplish a programming goal while still achieving the sales goal. And I've used that kind of negotiation between programming and sales. I've used that in general management because in this radio business, ultimately, there has to be a coming together of sales and programming, probably truer today than ever. But he was into that very, very early.
Why do you think Wacky is so fondly remembered today as a great radio station, not only by people in the Kentuckiana area, but also people who study top 40 radio of the era? Why has Wacky stood up to the test of time as having good memories about it?
I think just the collection of great individuals and a lot of showmanship. And I do think the connection between the music community and the radio station played a key role in that, because it was more than just the radio station. The music community was not isolated. It was an integrated community. That led to a personal touch because there were so many personal appearances. I mean, I'd make sometimes more money on the side than I would at the radio station through personal appearances, because there were
Club 68 in Lebanon, Kentucky.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the connection between the community, because the DJs were out among the listeners every week, and I think that connected, and I think that connection comes through on the radio at some point in time.
Well, thank you, Tim Tyler, Don Schwartz, for spending some time with us and sharing your Wacky memories here on 79WAKY.com.